priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
You are listening to the Trek Ranks Podcast, a member of the Tricorder Transmissions Podcast Network. This is episode 59, featuring the top five series doctors. Welcome, Star Trek fans. I am Jim Morehouse, and I am the host of the Trek Ranks Podcast. And tonight, we're doing our top five series doctors. Not bricklayers, not moon shuttle conductors, not doorstops. This week, we are stepping in the sick bay and we're loading up our hypospray with our top five Star Trek series doctors. So we've done this in the past. Tonight's show is a little bit of a format change for us. We're going to do one of our kind of finite topics where there are only six possible choices when you're ranking your top five doctors on Trek. So we'll run through exactly how we're going to do that in a minute in our diagnostic cycle. But first, I want to introduce our awesome guests for tonight's show, both our first-time Trek Ranks guests. First up, Mr. Atos himself. It's Chris Burris coming to us from the North Carolina sector. Welcome, Chris. Great to have you on the show, man.
Thank you. I appreciate the Atos reference, too.
That's great. I called him Mr. Atos because he's a librarian, which I love. I worked in a library for about 5 years through high school and college and love that job. So much fun. All right. Our second guest is Dr. Jen House from the UK sector. And we've actually been looking forward to having her on for this topic because she's actually a practicing medical professional. She is an optometrist and eye doctor. And I'm sure she has one of those fancy dangle contraptions that, like, Crusher and Pulaski wore in, like, the first couple of seasons of TNG, right?
Like, oh, yes.
Would an eye doctor would wear something like that, right, Jen?
Of course, absolutely.
All right, well, it's great to have you on the show. So I want to start, we do this with our first-time guest, just to get a quick Trek origin story. So, Jen, let's start with you. What's your quick Trek backstory? How'd you get into Trek, and have you seen it all?
I have seen it all several times through, even the animated series. I've only watched that quite recently, but I've now seen it all through twice.
Yeah.
But I started watching Trek back in the 90s. Any UK listeners will know, BBC Two on a Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. So TNG was my introduction. That was on all the way through when I was at secondary school. So that's what first got me into Star Trek.
I love it. And you've seen it all. So how about you, Chris? How'd you get into Trek?
Well, I remember watching Star Trek with my father when I was just a very young person. This was probably when I was 6 years old. I remember sitting on my father's lap and we watched an episode together. I can't remember the episode, but I remember watching the title sequence for season two. And when the Enterprise just streaks across the screen,
yeah.
I was instantly hooked. I was like, what was that? And I just became enamored of the series starting then. And I've been keeping up with the show in all of its iterations. And in fact, I just taught a course. Well, I was a guest lecturer for a professor friend of mine who wanted to just have his students discuss more Star Trek in this course about science fiction and myth. So I talked about the legal system in Star Trek in this particular class, and it was fairly well received.
Oh, that's awesome. We did our top five courtroom showdowns about 10 episodes ago or so. So there's a lot to talk about there for sure. So, all right, you're like a OG Trekkie like myself who was introduced with the original series and all the way through. I love it. That is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get into this topic. But first, our quick Trek Ranks recalibration.
What are you recalibrating?
Everything. It's a sweeping, a recalibration of all systems.
As regular listeners will know, general order number one here at Trek Ranks is that we love Trek and we love to rank Trek via some deep dive topics just to get the conversation started.
But what is that Vulcan motto? Infinite diversity.
In infinite combinations.
And what is diversity, but a celebration of differences.
And as T'Pol and Dr. Phlox just said, our mantra here at Trek Ranks is no wrong answers. Trek Ranks is basically just a celebration of differences. So we love it all from TOS to TNG, straight through to Enterprise and the Kelvin timeline, and now Discovery as well. It's all fair game here on the Trek Ranks podcast. And before we jump into our level one diagnostic, let's just quickly power up the Argus array so everyone knows exactly how they can hail us.
Open hailing frequencies. Hailing frequencies open. On viewer.
For Trek Ranks, as you might expect, you can check us out on the net access interface at trekranks.com, and you can contact me directly on Twitter at trekranks or at Enterprise Extra. And you can also call and leave us a message with your own picks at 609-512-LLAP at 609-512-5527. So to wrap it up, Jen and Chris, why don't you guys let everyone know how they can get a hold of you to talk some Trek. Jen?
The best place to find me is on Twitter, and I'm at Dr. Jen Throws, that's DrJenThrows.
Dr. Jen Throws, love it. And Chris, how about you? I know you're on Twitter too, right?
Yes, I'm on Twitter at Burris CJ, so at BURRISCJ, and that's how you can find me.
Perfect. All right, let's jump into our level one diagnostic to get into today's show.
Diagnostic cycle will be complete in 20 seconds.
So this week's diagnostic cycle is basically just going to run through exactly how we're going to rank our doctors. And as a starting point, I think they're going to disappoint some people because we have some parameters in place on a finite topics like this one. So we're just going to do only doctors are eligible for selection. And those are the six lead series doctors that we know and love so well. From TOS, Dr. Leonard McCoy, played by DeForest Kelly. TNG, Dr. Beverly Crusher, played by Gates McFadden. Deep Space Nine, Dr. Julian Bashir, played by Alexander Siddig. From Voyager, the emergency medical hologram, the doctor, played by Robert Picardo. Enterprise, Dr. Phlox, played by John Billingsley. And from Discovery, Dr. Hugh Colbert, played by Wilson Cruz, who became a series regular here in season two of Discovery. So for good measure, if you're so inclined and you want to highlight some Carl Urban from the Kelvin timeline in your Dr. McCoy picks, that's fine. We're good with that. But for the most part, you know, we call it series regulars, which means we're not including Dr. Catherine Pulaski from TNG because she was never a regular. She was never a regular. Sorry, we love Diana Muldaur, but always billed as a guest star. And same for like Nurse Chapel and Nurse Agawa, Dr. Salar, Dr. Mbenga. There's a whole list of them. So if you want to complain about this, you can address your angry letters to the Starfleet Medical Board and let us know. So, all right, this is the way we can do this topic and keep it in control. Of course, this is Trek Ranks, and if you want to break the rules, we always fully support that as well. Okay, so let's jump into our prime directives.
I do not concur with your captain's decision.
She's following our prime directive.
Define prime directive.
So for this week's prime directive, this is actually the meat of our show. So this is like the order of things usually. We're going to do all the heavy lifting here in this part of the show. It's our discussion. We're going to go through six rounds talking about each doctor, and we're going to highlight each like something that we each like and think about when we think about that doctor, and highlight an episode that maybe features that thing with our five words and a hashtag. So we're going to jump into that right now. But before we do that, let's actually just get a quick feel for how you kind of approach this topic, just to even kind of narrow it down and start thinking about it. So Jen, how about you? How did you kind of tackle this when I threw the topic at you?
Well, it's the first thing I thought of was what are my favorite episodes with these characters in? But when I actually thought about, I think with some of them, they don't actually do a lot of doctoring in the episodes that they're starring in. So what I was looking for is specific examples of them being a doctor in certain ways. So it might not be a big part of the episode. It might just have been a little part. But the important thing was, are they doing something medical? And that's how I looked at it.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant, because a perfect example that I thought of, not as a spoiler alert, but one of Crusher's most memorable episodes is Remember Me, but she's not really doing anything medical in that episode. So,
so my favorite Crusher episodes are Remember Me and Attached, and there's not a whole lot of medical stuff.
Yeah, in either one of those. Yeah, it's a great point. That's another good one. Okay, so how about you, Chris? How did you kind of approach this topic?
Like Jen, I was looking at it from, okay, first of all, were they doing medicine in the episode? And then did they have a leading kind of role in the episode? Because every character gets a highlight at some point, but just one to that really makes the character stand out amongst the rest. So that was my approach too.
Yeah, that's great. I looked for pretty much the similar thing, something... Look for a moment that I think helps define the character. And for the most part, the episodes are about those specific moments. Some are kind of catch-alls, too, that I think are good character episodes that define the character across their entire kind of time on Trek. Okay, so let's jump into it. We're going to start with round one. He's Dr. Leonard McCoy, DeForest Kelly. So, Jen, let's start with you. What do you want to highlight about Dr. McCoy?
I think with Dr. McCoy, he does tend to pretend to be that grumpy old doctor, but he's just willing to stop and treat anybody, no matter who it is or what it is. He'll give his, you know, be a doctor and help them. My five words for this are mad-doctor fixes kidney, # fully functional. And it's the scene in Voyage Home where they're going off to rescue Chekhov from the hospital, but he takes his time to stop and give the little old lady her pill to sort her kidney out.
I love it. He just couldn't help himself. He had to help out the little old lady. That is genius. What a great pick. So, so funny. So, Chris, what's your take on this pick? I love it.
I would also have to highlight Dr. McCoy's cantankerous nature, and he was just a professional, but he just seemed like the most human person, well, 20th century human person in the midst of this fantastic 23rd century world that he was a part of, and he just felt like such a fish out of water. Like, he hated the transporter, he wasn't too keen about Spock's logic, but he still managed to get the job done. And my five words would be the heart of the trio with Kirk and Spock. And the # I would use would be, I'm not a doctor, but, because every time he would say that, I'm a doctor, but
yeah.
Even in spite of all of his quirks and foibles personally, he was a doctor, and he did his job. So,
yeah, that's great. Is there an episode that you highlighted?
I would highlight A Private Little War.
Oh, yeah.
That was an episode where he talked to Kirk about whether or not they should become involved in this conflict by giving Tyree's tribe weapons that would best their opponents. And McCoy was basically debating Kirk on, do they have the right to give those weapons in spite of the Prime Directive? And McCoy felt one way, Kirk felt the other way, but McCoy was able to stand his ground in that debate with Kirk.
Yeah, that's a great moment for his defining character. And Jen, I love that you said that you think he was pretending to be grumpy. That's a great way to look at it. For sure there are times when he was kind of playing the part, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The way he approached Spock, you know he didn't really mean it. So I love that. Okay, I'll go to my five words and a hashtag, and I have I'm a doctor, not a coal miner, # the ultimate sacrifice. And I picked the episode The Empath from TOS season 3. Because I really think it shows kind of his dedicated nature for that he's always going to be the healer. And if you remember at the end of this one, the Vians show up and say they're going to torture somebody, and Kirk has to pick. He basically incapacitates Kirk and Spock so that they have to pick him. So he would be the one that basically has given up his own life. And even at the end when Jem's trying to save him, he's like, no, I can't. I won't let you lose your life to save mine. And that defines him. He's always about the medical and the practice. And he's just, like you said, Chris, an amazing part of the triumvirate of Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. So, Jen, any thoughts on the empath?
This was actually one that made my list. Yeah, there's a couple that I thought about using. This was one of them. But definitely a good example of McCoy there.
Yeah, I also had Friday's Child and Journey to Babel and For the World is Hollow. And it's kind of on the edge of my list. So let's go to round two and talk about the great Dr. Beverly Crusher, played by Gates McFadden. And Jen, let's start with you. What's your pick?
Well, I think the sort of defining feature for Crusher is just how brave and badass she is. My five words are kidnapped to treat dimensional jumps, # if you'd give reasonable orders. And it's season 3, episode 12, The High Ground.
Fantastic. We have a duplicate because that's my pick as well. So I'll give you my five words on # should have been front and center # the dancing doctor. I love her in the high ground. So Jen, talk about why you picked The High Ground.
Oh, she just gets on with her job over the objections of everybody else, not worried about her own safety. She's there to give medical care, and that's what she does. And I love the argument discussion she has with Picard when he gets kidnapped about him giving orders and her saying, well, if you'd give reasonable orders.
she's so great in that. I'll always, one of my favorite moments for her was the beginning of that when Data and Worf are on the ground with her during the terrorist attack. And they're like, we're getting out of here. And Picard and Riker are on the bridge. Like, we're beaming everybody up. And she's like, nope, I am not leaving until the local medical people get here. And Riker just looks at Picard like, I don't want to be in the transporter room when you beam her up. I love that moment. Okay, Chris, what's your take on that pick and Beverly Crusher?
Beverly Crusher was a medical professional through and through, even from that bizarre eyepiece that she wore in that first season episode. She just had the temperament and challenge to maintain a medical operation on a vessel the size of the Enterprise D. And so my five words would be, no matter the personal cost, which was what Tasha Yar said to her in her last episode about who Beverly was to her. And the # would be more than a doctor, because you saw Beverly not just being a doctor, but when she was serious about, I'm not beaming up and leaving these people behind. But the episode that I was going to pick was Suspicions.
Yeah.
Because in that episode, she was basically an investigator trying to figure out what happened to the mystery behind what happened to this Ferengi scientist who had died under mysterious circumstances. And she almost lost her job because of it, but she was able to get it back by the end of the episode. And she got to fire a phaser, which I loved.
That was a great moment. She didn't just fire a phaser. She fired a phaser clean through that guy.
That's true.
Jen, what's your take on Suspicions as a pick?
Again, that's another episode I love. And she's just, again, so just badass in it. I nearly put that on my list, but excluded it because it was more forensics rather than the medical.
Instead of medical, yeah.
But yeah, I love that.
I almost picked ethics because I love the way she just is unwavering in terms of how she approaches the problem solving on the medical side in that episode.
That was another one on my list. I had quite a long list for Crusher, actually.
Yeah, she is a great, great character. I love her. Okay, let's pop into round three, and we've got Dr. Julian Bashir, played by Alexander Siddig on Deep Space Nine. Love him. Jen, what's your take on Dr. Bashir?
Oh, again, another doctor that I wouldn't mind being treated by. Comes in a little bit annoying to start off with.
Fair to say.
As he grows, he really develops into a really caring and compassionate doctor. My five words are masterclass in managing manipulative patients. Not a smug, sanctimonious doctor. And it's season 2, episode 22, The Wire.
Oh, that's a great one. Think of that.
Yeah, because people think of it more as a Garrick episode, but it's a really good example of the doctor doing everything he can to help a patient that's very ill, not always terribly cooperative, and the way he manages them and goes to the lengths to try and sort out Garrick's problems is really quite impressive.
Right. No, it's a great thought, because he literally goes all the way to Cardassia to try to get the answers, or wherever an Abrantain was. But that's a great pick. I did not think of that one. And he's also pretty clever medically in terms of how he's addressing it. I love it. Chris, how about you? What's your pick for Dr. Bashir?
Okay, well, for Dr. Bashir, same thing that Jim was saying. He was an annoying kind of character at first, but he did evolve over time into a much more stable kind of respected asset to the entire station. And the five words I would choose would be grew into his role eventually, because the very first episode, Emissary, he was annoying, but when the station was attacked by the Cardassians, he did force Odo to do something outside of his comfort zone and hold his hand to keep his patient from bleeding out and save that person's life. But the episode that I would pick would be, I'm sorry, and the hashtag would be Augment Made Good, because one of the truly surprising aspects of Bashir's character was that he had been genetically enhanced by his parents, and it was like, wow.
Yep.
But that just filled in some parts of his story, but it didn't take over his entire character, which it could have done unexpectedly and in less capable hands. So kudos to the creators for that. But the episode that I would pick would be The Quickening.
Yep.
And that was just showed his caring, his compassion, and his determination as a doctor to try and save the people on this planet from the Dominion engineered disease.
Yeah, that's a defining episode for him for sure. And it's funny, your five words on hashtag is pretty similar to mine. I kind of flipped it, and I'll just give mine now. I had five words: genetically engineered twist is underrated, hashtag from liability to MVP. Because we all are on the same wavelength here. It's amazing how kind of not great, I don't know what the right word is, lame, or just awkward, I think is the word. The first maybe season and a half, two seasons, just was a character that was not working. If we're all being honest, this was strange. But man, by the end of season 7, amazing arc, amazing character. I love Dr. Bashir. He's one of my faves. And I think the genetically engineered twist is part of that, but there's so many other great episodes too, like the Armageddon game when he starts bonding with O'Brien, and you mentioned The Quickening and Nor the Battle to the Strong. So the episode I picked, another one that was before the genetically engineered twist, was Hippocratic Oath. And I love that episode where it's him and O'Brien, and basically he's saying, I am going to help this Jem'Hadar soldier, because there's a chance here to affect real change with the Jem'Hadar. And O'Brien's just like, what are you talking about? No, you're not. So, and they were in conflict, and Bashir was not going to waver on his medical stance in terms of helping them. So I love that. Jem, what's your take on Hippocratic Oath and or The Quickening?
Oh, Hippocratic Oath and The Quickening were both on my possible episodes for that.
Yep.
Again, they're both really good examples of a doctor that's willing to do what he thinks, you know, go to any lengths to do what he thinks right to treat his patients, whether his patients are victims of the Dominion or Jem'Hadar. If he thinks they need to be treated, he's going to do what he can to do it.
Chris, any thoughts on Hippocratic Oath?
Basically, just what you had said. It was just a great episode. Yeah, with Bashir making those choices, it was another highlight for his character.
Yeah, big step on his development.
Yeah.
Okay, we're halfway through. Let's go to round four and talk about the emergency medical hologram, the doctor played by Robert Picardo. So Jen, please state the nature of the medical emergency.
I love the EMH. Again, not always the best bedside manner, but you know, it does grow as time goes on. But one of his, you know, ability, his snark is quite a defining characteristic. And the ability to deal with the weird and wonderful in the Delta Quadrant. So my five words are treating mutants, managing missing tongues, # wake up lieutenant, and it's season 2, episode 15, Threshold.
Oh, how interesting. That is so good. Explain this pick. I love it.
So I think it demonstrates a good range of the Doctor's abilities, actually. You start off with a nice bit of spark when Tom has the reaction to Neelix's coffee, where he says it's a miracle he's still alive. And then the classic line, which one of my favourite Doctor lines, when Janeway asks the Doctor to wake up Paris. You know, most people would reach for the hypospray, but not the EMH. He just shouts, wake up, Lieutenant. But he also shows quite a lot of caring towards Kes when they're having to deal with the fact that Tom's died. The compassion he shows there, I think, is quite impressive. And then somehow he manages to get Janeway and Tom back from being lizards to humans again, which, you know, it takes skill.
That took some skill.
I believe the answer lies in forcing his DNA to revert to its original coding. Once that occurs, his body should return to its former state.
How do we do that?
We destroy all of the new DNA in his body. His cells will have to use the original coding as a blueprint. But the only way to destroy the mutant DNA is with highly focused antiproton radiation.
Antiprotons? The only place on this ship which generates antiprotons is the warp core.
Exactly. I'd like to place Mr. Paris in an isotropic restraint, and then infuse it with controlled antiproton bursts. A tricky venture, but I see no other alternative.
We'll have to take the warp core offline, then I'll need about 3 hours to set up an interface.
In 3 hours, there won't be anything left of Mr. Paris to save. We have to make the attempt within an hour, at the most.
Get moving.
That's an amazing pick. I had not considered that one or thought about it, but as soon as you said it, I was like, yeah, he's just kind of central in that whole episode, for sure.
I think it's an underrated episode.
And especially in the way that it is an underrated episode, in that the first half of the episode is really kind of an intriguing, interesting story. It goes into a unique territory, and depending on how you look at it, either off the rails or kind of into some kind of psychedelic area that maybe you love. So that's fantastic. How about you, Chris? What was your pick?
Okay. The overall word that would sum up the EMH for me would be humanity ? And that just speaks to how Robert Picardo played the Doctor. As he may have been just a hologram, but was he really a hologram at times? And so the five words I picked were more than light and force fields. Like, force fields is kind of a cheat. I guess you could look at it as one word or two words.
Allowed.
Okay. And the # would be what is human. And the episode that I would point to would be Latent Image.
Interesting. Okay.
That's the episode where the Doctor was on an away mission with Harry Kim and another Voyager officer. The shuttle was attacked, and the Doctor was faced with the choice of either saving one or the other of his patients. And he chose to save Harry Kim, and the other patient died. And that had been hidden from the Doctor after the incident. But then as he tried to reconstruct his memories, all that information came back, forcing him into basically an existential crisis. And it was very powerful to see the Doctor reacting like a human being, even though he was, as he described, the sum of all Federation medical knowledge and his experiences with the crew up to that point. But that just seeing him reacting in a place where he just could not find himself, and what the crew had to do to help him become comfortable, or at least become, comfortable, I guess is the word for this, but being able to live with his choice and exist, rather, since he's not a living entity, but being able to find that comfort in that choice. It was just a very powerful moment, especially at the end with Janeway sitting, the crew taking turns sitting with the doctor, and Janeway just being a sounding board for him at the end. It was just a very great moment.
I'm glad you mentioned the end, because I really love the way they resolved this episode and decided to do that. And I love this pick because it's also my pick. So my five words in a hashtag, I'm a doctor, not a voyeur, hashtag EMH Mark One. And yeah, I chose Leighton Image, and I chose it. So I love the doctor. He's super smart, intelligent, fun character, really the clever way that they brought him in. But I like this episode because, and you kind of said this in that he's the humanity, but I look at it, to me, this is the pros and cons of what it would mean to have a computer program as your doctor, because he has all this incredible medical precision, but he's also very susceptible to the fallacies of that technology and how it can adversely affect him or just not work. So we'll talk about this when we do our rankings at the end, but it's kind of a all or nothing. It can be a situation where it's all or nothing with the doctor, but I love that this episode really clearly lays that out as a potential problem that they're trying to work on. So, Jen, what's your take on Leighton Image as a pick?
Yeah, I love this episode. This one, I never thought of this one, which I need to go back and watch it again. But yeah, it's a really good episode. And yeah, it's that how to make decisions, making ethical decisions and how you manage them and how he copes with it it's a really interesting idea, and it's done really well. So yeah, I'm off to watch that once I finish doing this.
Yeah, the way the mystery unfolds is really, really clever. It's a great narrative in this episode. Ton of doctor options to pick up. To pick from. So, okay, let's move on to round five. He is our favorite Denobulan, Dr. Phlox, played by John Billingsley. So, Jen, how about you? What's your pick for Phlox?
Well, see, the main thing about Phlox is just his sheer enthusiasm. He's just enthusiastic about everything.
Mm-hmm.
The one I've gone for is just a small scene in an episode. My five words are positive mental attitude improves healing, hashtag so do bloodworms.
So good.
And the episode I have gone for is a scene from it's season 2, episode 4, Dead Stop. And it's from the scene right at the beginning of that when he's treating Reed's injury that he sustained by the Romulan mine the episode before, when Reed's complaining about how much it hurts. And Phlox explains that it is unethical to harm a patient, but he can inflict as much pain as he likes. And then offers him more bloodworms, which he's not too keen on for some reason. But I think it's a good example of his enthusiasm and his somewhat alternative techniques.
Yeah, his enthusiasm is a great word. I didn't have that written down. I had his optimism and his cheer, but I love that framing. He's so great. He's such an underrated character. And that's an awesome pick. I know exactly the scene you're talking about, and he's just loving his job in that scene. It's invigorating. Chris, how about you? What's your pick for Phlox?
Okay, my word for Phlox would be curiosity. Like you said, Jen, he just has this curiosity about everything around him, especially food and just finding out. It's just a moment, just a throwaway moment, even though this was in Archer's mind in the episode, oh gosh, when a night in sick bay, that's it, where Archer was staying the night in sick bay, he started hallucinating about a romance with T'Pol and all these queries from Phlox, which were all in his mind, just saying, tell me, Captain, when was the last time you had a relationship?
Right.
It was just hilarious. But the five words I would choose would be the mad scientist with compassion because of all of his creatures and such, but they were part of his character and his medical work, and the hashtag alien humanity. And the episode I would pick would be Dear Doctor, where it was a framing device. He was writing a letter to one of his colleagues about a recent encounter with planet where two sentient species had evolved, and one was eventually over time going to overtake the other one as being the dominant species on the planet. Yep. And he had the choice of whether or not to treat that species or to let them die out. And he presented that to Archer, and Archer made the decision to go ahead and treat him. But at the end, he was saying that he wasn't sure if he was even going to give him that choice, but he was glad that he made the right one. And that was kind of a aha kind of moment, because even though Archer did concur with his decision, what would have happened if he didn't?
Yeah, I mean, that Dear Doctor is the quintessential Phlox episode for sure. I love the way he is the champion for the Menk in that situation. And that dilemma is amazing when he's like, he wasn't even sure he was going to give him the option. Mm-hmm. But it's just a clever episode. I love the framing of it with him writing a letter and kind of explaining his experiences on this human ship to his colleague. And the way he goes about his job with curiosity is another great word. Enthusiasm and curiosity. Those are perfect descriptions of Phlox. Jen, any take on Dear Doctor before I get to my pick?
Again, this one nearly made my list. It was one of my sort of systems. Again, I had quite a few for Phlox.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does. It demonstrates his passion and enthusiasm and curiosity and all those kind of words. And it's an excellent episode and a really interesting dilemma he's got to deal with there.
And it also highlights his expertise because he figures this out.
Yeah.
And he has an option. It's a great, great episode. One of my favorites for Enterprise. So I considered this one as well. Also considered The Breach and Cold Station 12 and Affliction Divergence. But I went, I'll give my five words in a hashtag, Pyrethian bats to osmotic eels, hashtag optimism, Captain. And I love Phlox. So I picked Similitude because this episode just breaks my heart. And for me, as much as this is a trip episode, it's a Phlox episode. Watching the way, again, his expertise for the job, that he has this as an option, that he feels he can pull this off, building a clone type character to basically harvest an organ and save Trip. But how he raises young Sim is amazing. And I'm telling you, it's one of the all-time just sad cry moments is when Sim knows he's coming in and has to be basically euthanized. And he says, "You were a hell of a father." And Phlox says, "You were a hell of a son." That's just an amazing moment across those 2 weeks that he helped raise Sim. I love Phlox. I love his passion and his optimism, enthusiasm, and curiosity. Great character. So any take, Jen, on Similitude?
I know I didn't think of this episode at all for Phlox, but now you say it. The way that he raised and looks after him and, again, does everything he can to heal his patient.
Yeah.
I'm going to cry now because it's such a heartbreak.
I get emotional always thinking about it too. How about you, Chris? Any final thoughts on Phlox?
Well, just what you said about Similitude, you would think it was a Trip episode, but it was as much a Phlox episode as it was a Trip episode. And how Phlox started to regard the clone as just a clone from one of his creatures. But then by the end of the clone's life, he had become attached, and just knowing what he had to do with the clone in order to save Trip, and just having the clone call him father. Oh yeah, I was wrecked by the end of that episode. Wrecked. It was wrecked. It was tough, but those are the tough choices.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I doubted you, Doc.
No need to apologize.
You're serious. You see, I don't just remember Trip's childhood. I remember mine. You made a damn good father.
You were a damn good son.
You said to me once that commanding a starship was what you were meant to do. I guess this is what I was meant to do. Good luck, Captain.
It's an all-time great episode of Trek. I think it's number 3 for Enterprise on Trek ranks. Okay, let's go to our final round and our newest Doctor, who, like I said before, became a series regular just in season 2 of Discovery and great addition to Trek. It's Dr. Hugh Colbert, played by Wilson Cruz. So, Jen, let's hear your pick for the newest Doctor on the block.
Well, Colbert, I have to say, I love his bedside manner, and he's so protective of patients. The 5 words I've chosen: the frontal lobe is overrated, hashtag feelings. And it's season 1, episode 4, The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry. And it's the scene where he's fixing up Stamets. Lorca is standing over trying to get him back to work and sort the jumps out. And Colbert's sort of standing up to Lorca a bit and just making sure that Stamets is all right before he sends him back to work. And it's just such a lovely little scene. It's not a long one, but I think it's a really good example of him being a sort of active doctor and looking after his patient.
And just a good person. I almost picked this scene because I love that he's kind of the first person who's standing up to Lorca and calling him out in this scene for being kind of a warmonger. It's actually a perfect pick because it's very definitive of who Hugh Colbert is in that moment when he's fixing up his patient, who's also someone that he obviously loves, and also trying to kind of fight for the better good against Lorca, knowing that that's just bad news. It's an awesome, awesome pick. And I love that you said that his bedside manner, it's so good. Just the way he speaks to people. And I think I already said this, but you can tell he's a good person.
Yeah.
I love how that comes through in kind of all of his dialogue. So
you've got the perfect charming voice that if you've got an emergency, you'd love him to tell you what's wrong because he'll just keep you calm and look off.
absolute truth. Chris, how about you and your take on Dr. Colbert?
Okay. With Dr. Colbert, he was just, in addition to his bedside manner, which was absolutely wonderful. Thanks for pointing that out, Jen. He was on a journey throughout the first 2 seasons after he was killed and then resurrected. And the 5 words I would have for him would be finding his path once again, hashtag second chances. And this was another similar scene with Colbert and Stamets, but it's in the episode Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2.
Oh.
After Stamets had basically fallen into a comatose state and Colbert was saying that he was going to transfer to the Enterprise after the events of the battle, but just seeing Stamets in that state, he couldn't leave him. And after the pain that he had experienced from his resurrection and not knowing quite who he was following that, but just seeing Stamets there just snapped him back to his love for Stamets and caring for him as his patient. That just brought all that back together. So he was able to have a second chance, not just saving Stamets, but saving himself.
Yep. I love that. I love the way you kind of started. And I mean, in some ways it's like the understatement of the year that he was on a journey in these 2 seasons, to say the least. But I considered that. I love that final scene, that final moment that kind of gives us a little bit of closure, with obviously not closure as in the end, but closure from what we've seen and knowing there's a lot more to come between Stamets and Colbert. And their jump to the 32nd century is crazy. I'm really looking forward to seeing that. Any thoughts on that pick, Jen?
Yeah, that's an excellent pick. That was my kind of second choice pick, to be honest. It was quite tough to choose between the 2. So yeah, excellent choice there.
All right, so my 5 words and a hashtag for Colbert: one half of historic couple, hashtag open your eyes. And I'll start by saying the open your eyes moment is one of my favorite from season 1 of Discovery. I think it's classic quintessential Star Trek to have this kind of metaphysical experience and having a character like that help guide the crew out of the mirror universe and back home. And I just thought it was incredibly well filmed and emotionally done. That was from the episode What's Past is Prologue, but but was not my pick. I chose a scene that's actually kind of similar to the one you chose, Jake. It's a bit of a short scene, but it's Culber standing up for the right thing. Again, just being a good person. And it's from Choose Your Pain, because he's the first person along with Burnham that really stands up for Ripper, the tardigrade. And I'll tell you, when I'm a huge animal rescue person. I love animals. And, man, I had trouble watching those Butcher's Knife and Choose Your Pain because of what was happening with the tardigrade. And the ending and the payoff was great. But I just love Culber because he's basically Saru's saying, hey, I don't care if the tardigrade's sick. We need to get out of here. So rehydrate him and get him back up and running. And Culber's like, no, I'm not doing that. There's no way I'm doing that because it's going to put the creature in danger. And then it's a great turning point moment for Stamets, because Stamets realizes, yeah, he's right. So I'm going to be the one that takes this on and becomes the person guiding through the mycelial network. I love it. And it also ends with the moment with Culber and Stamets standing in front of the mirror, brushing their teeth, and that creepy mirror preview scene. So, Jen, any take on that one?
Oh yeah, and there's another scene that I didn't think of, but yeah, it's a really good example of Culber just being a really good person. I think that's the defining of him, really, and yeah, it's an excellent scene.
I love what he represents for the series. Okay, Chris, any final thoughts on Culber before we move on?
Yeah, just to echo that scene, it's a moment where Culber really embraces the section of the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm, and how the tardigrade, it is a life form. And he being able to have him be the voice calling that into question was just a very good moment. And it speaks to his goodness as a person, as well as a professional.
Well said. Okay, well, that's that was the fun part. That's the awesome, fun breakdown of six classic Trek characters. Now comes the tough part on Trek Ranks. We're going to jump into the order of things, and we're going to rank our top five and figure out who our number one series doctors are.
I am a Jem'Hadar. He is a Vorta. It is the order of things.
Again, the order of things this week is just going to be our quick unveiling of our picks. So, Jen and Chris, it's time for us to get tested. We can't put it off any longer. We're going to rank from 5 to 1 our top series doctors. And just a reminder, just because you're number 6 or 5 or you're omitted at number 6 or doesn't mean we don't love them. We love them all. These are 5, 6 amazing characters. So, all right, Jen, you're up first. What's your 5 to 1 on the doctors?
Right. So this was so hard to do. 1 and 2.
So hard.
1 and 2 were quite easy. 3 to 5 kept changing. And they've been changing up until literally 2 seconds ago. So my number 5 is the emergency medical hologram from Voyager. Number 4, Dr. Phlox. So enthusiastic, but I think I'd be a little bit wary of some of his treatments. I'm not keen on bloodworms.
That is understandable.
Number 3, for his lovely, wonderful, calming bedside manner, Dr. Culber.
Great.
Number 2, probably one of the most intelligent doctors out there, Dr. Bashir.
Yep.
Number 1, I think if anybody has followed me on Twitter, they could probably guess this one. My number 1 is Dr. Crusher.
I love that list. So you've got Crusher at number 1. And that makes sense, obviously. I've seen you on Twitter. And yeah, so I mean that's an awesome list. You can't argue. I love you have Bashir at number 2 as well. So okay. Jen, I hope you don't hate me. I know how hard that was, but I'm glad you made it through. All right, Chris, let's hear your top 5 on the doctors.
Okay. Well, this was a difficult list to order. So I had the same troubles that Jen did. I'm guessing that you did too. So,
yeah.
Okay. Number five, the EMH from Voyager.
Yep, that makes sense.
Okay. Number four, don't hate me, Jen, but that's where I put Dr. Crusher. Number three, Dr. Phlox.
Dr. Phlox at number three. Got it. Yep.
Number two, Dr. Bashir.
Well, you guys agreed on that, so that's good.
Okay. And number one for me is Dr. McCoy.
All right. Any particular reason for McCoy at number one? I love it.
Because in some ways, McCoy set the standard for what a doctor elite in a leading role on a Star Trek series should be. The professional, but at the same time with a little distinctiveness to their own character.
Yep, that makes sense. Okay, well, let's. There's some trends emerging. This is great. So here is my list. I will say my number five is also the EMH. So all three of us chose the EMH at number five. I just, I don't always feel like I can trust him. And at the end, he got a little petulant there. It's like, I want to be a command hologram. Okay, can you help us out in sickbay? All right, and my number four, and this is going along with Chris, is Dr. Beverly Crusher, who I love dearly. But the main reason for me that she's number four, I wish that she was, if this show was made today, she'd be the headliner. She'd be the top billing, and she should have been used so much more than she was because she's a great character. All right, my number three is the OG Dr. McCoy, and I love him for what he's represented for Trek for 50-plus years. And my number two is Dr. Phlox, and I kind of agree that we all love his enthusiasm, but the alienness of it sometimes seems a little experimental as well. So, but he's still my number two. And my number one, and the only reason I didn't choose Culber is just because I'm usually all about quantity, and it hasn't been quite enough yet. So my number one is Dr. Julian Subatoi Bashir, who I just think grew to become one of the most interesting characters in Trek after a very awkward and kind of clumsy start for the character.
Oh, this'll be perfect. Real frontier medicine.
Frontier medicine?
Major, I had my choice of any job in the fleet.
Did you?
I didn't want some cushy job or a research grant. I wanted this. The farthest reaches of the galaxy. One of the most remote outposts available. This is where the adventure is. This is where heroes are made. Right here. In the wilderness.
This wilderness is my home.
Cardassians
left behind a lot of injured people. Doctor, you can make yourself useful by bringing your Federation medicine to the natives. Oh, you'll find them a friendly, simple folk.
So if we're looking at some of the trends, we all had the EMH at five. Chris and I both had Dr. Culber off our list, and Jen had Dr. McCoy off her list. And Bashir seems to be kind of the high. You guys both had him at number two, and I had him at number one as well. So he finished pretty high. That's not easy. Not fun at all to have to break that down, but we did it. We made it through. Any final thoughts on the list or anybody else's list there, Jen?
Well, I think it's great that Bashir came so high up on everybody's because, to be honest, he had a very rocky start, but grew to be one of the best doctors, I think, personally. Might be more cruel, but I think she was a bit hard done by on some of the writing. I think that she could have done a lot more. And it was hard to leave McCoy off my list.
It's exactly right. I mean, when you watch an episode like The High Ground, you just think there's so much there for her to be this groundbreaking character. So, all right, Chris, any final thoughts on all the picks?
Well, it was interesting that we all had the EMH as our number five and Bashir ranked so highly. it was just a very hard decision to make. Like, I hated leaving Dr. Culber off of my list, but I had the same thing. He just, right now, he's only been in two seasons, and there's just so much more to go with him. So I was kind of reluctant to leave him off, but I had to make a pick there. So
doesn't mean we don't love them all.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate the conversation we had on Culber, because it helped kind of reinforce in my head that why he's such an interesting character, because he's such a calming and such a good person beyond the medical side of things. So I love it.
But I want to add one quick thing about Dr. Crusher. Yep. And the fact that she was commanding the Enterprise in
Descent,
a couple of episodes, that was just a great moment, especially where she had the leading log entry for In Thy Image. Wasn't it? No. Thine Own Self. That's it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Where Troy decided to become a command officer. But having Dr. Crusher on the bridge at the beginning of the episode, that was just such a great moment. And I just wish they had done more with her in that regard.
Yep, definitely on the same page there. I love it. And in Descent, she was amazing as well. So, okay, fantastic conversation. I love it. So we are going to, we'll skip our regeneration cycle because there's no real stats or anything to recap. So we're going to jump straight into our temporal causality loop.
The Enterprise has been caught up in a temporal causality loop. And I suspect that something similar may have happened to you.
For this week's temporal causality loop, we're going to go back to episode 54, which was our 5-episode marathon for a rainy day. And I'm just going to highlight one list that I got that I absolutely love. We got a ton of them. Everyone was bunkering down for their Trek marathons. But we got one that had an introductory 5 words and a hashtag for the whole list. And I loved it. It's from Brooke Horton, who is at A Whale in the Moon on Twitter. And I love this list. Her 5 words and a hashtag were getting the band back together, hashtag Dahar Masters each. And her 5 picks were TOS Errand of Mercy, from TOS The Trouble with Dribbles, from TOS Day of the Dove, from Deep Space Nine Blood Oath, and from Deep Space Nine The Sword of Kaelas. So basically, she just put together a big old Kor, Kang, and Koloth marathon. And I can't think of anything better than that for a rainy day. So that was an awesome list and an awesome hashtag, the Dahar Masters each. Okay, so that's more than enough to get us out of this week's temporal causality loop. So as always, I want to thank everyone again for all the great responses that you send to us here at Trek Ranks. Please keep your list coming to me at Trek Ranks on Twitter so I can retweet them. But we also want to hear from you. So please put together your own list of top 5 series doctors or top 5 series engineers, which is the other one that we've done on this, or any list from our past shows. You can send us anything. Call us at the Tricorder Transmission at 609-512-5527. That's 609-512-LLAP. So hopefully we'll hear from you so you can be featured on the next episode of Trek Ranks. And on the next episode of Trek Ranks, we are bringing back our Scenes in Trek series, which is my favorite that we do here on Trek Ranks. So in the past, we've done scenes in a turbo lift, scenes on a shuttlecraft, scenes in a Jeffries tube. This week or next week, we are doing our top 5 scenes on location. So scenes that were filmed outside of the regular sets and were filmed on location. So it's going to be awesome. Can't wait to do it. So Jen and Chris, Jen, how about you? What would kind of jump out at you as a scene on location if you had to put your list together right now?
The first thing that springs to mind is the Sherwood Forest in Cupid.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's a good – I wonder where they filmed that.
Apparently, it's in Pasadena somewhere.
Yeah, I wonder if that's at the Disney Ranch or if that's Bronson Canyon. That's a good one. I love it. That's
go and visit it as well in a few weeks' time.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's fantastic. That's right. You're going to be at STLV. That's exciting. We'll get to.
We are going to LA before, and we're doing a tour of various locations. So I shall find out
where it is. That is exciting. I love it. It's so cool. All right. How about you, Chris? Any scene on location jumping out at you?
The one episode that comes to mind is Arena with the Vasquez Rocks.
Yep. That's an iconic.
Yeah. The iconic Kirk versus Bourne episode. So it was just amazing the way they were able to utilize the surroundings as part of the combat between the two characters was just great.
Yeah. And then, and used throughout Trek, you know, whether it's the Mintakans or the Voyager all over the place. I love it. Or Tyree with Sisko in Deep Space Nine. Awesome. That's going to be a great topic. So, all right. Well, just a huge thanks to Jen House and Chris Burris for coming on the show. Appreciate you guys taking the time, doing all the homework, because this was a fun topic. Any final Trek thoughts before we get going?
No, just thank you very much for having us on. And to be honest, I'll watch any of the Doctor episodes anytime. So it's been great homework. I've loved it.
That's fantastic. All right, Chris, how about you, man? Glad to have you on.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity to be here. And it was just a great way to look at another side of Star Trek. Just focusing on some of those commonalities, like all series have a doctor, but what makes each doctor so unique? So thanks for the opportunity to talk about that.
Yeah, it was a great way to summarize it. Super fun. All right, finally, I just want to thank everyone again for engaging with us here on episode 59 of the Trek Ranks podcast. As always, I want to close by saying I'm looking forward to standing with you again here in this place where I belong.
Transporter room 3, lock onto the away team. Prepare to beam them back.
Yes, Captain.
Sir, I've recommended such a course, but there are several wounded, and Dr. Crusher is insisting on attending to
them. I understand. Picard to Dr. Crusher.
Go ahead.
Doctor, Commander Data has informed me of your situation.
I already know what you're going to say.
Doctor, will you at least allow me to...
The longer we argue, the longer it's going to take me to say...
Doctor, you are endangering yourself and the away team.
Captain, I am trying to put life back into a wounded body with sleight of hand. I'm not going anywhere. Data and Worf don't have to stay. Crusher out.
Transporter room, do you have a lock on the away team?
Aye, sir. Shall I transport them?
I don't want to be in the transporter room to greet her. Commander Data, hold your position until the Rutian medics arrive.
Aye, sir.
Hi there, thanks again for listening. If you're cruising the galaxy looking for even more Trek talk, why not visit our good friends Bill and Dan over at TrekGeeks.com? They've got a great podcast that covers a wide range of Star Trek topics, so you're sure to find something you'll love. And if you're in the mood for some awesome tunes, then you really need to head over to 5YearMission.net. The guys are writing a song for every episode of the original series, and each one is absolutely brilliant. So that's TrekGeeks.com and 5YearMission.net. Check them out today.
Well, it's a new ship,
but she's got the right name. Now, you remember that year.
I will, sir.
You treat her like a lady, and she'll always bring you home.